Android, Oreos, Minecraft, Xboxes, super speedy iPhone facial recognition, and expert drone photography tips. All that and more coming up on Tech News Today.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Tech News Today is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Tech News Today, episode 1836, recorded Monday, August 21st, 2017.
This episode of Tech News Today is brought to you by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Home plays a big role in your life. That's why Quicken Loans created Rocket Mortgage. It lets you apply simply and understand the entire mortgage process fully so you can be confident that you're getting the right mortgage for you. Get started at rocketmortgage.com/TNT. Welcome to Tech News Today. This is a show where we tell you the tech news that has to do with weirdly tasting cookies. I'm Megan Maroney.
I'm Jason Howell. It's just a random occurrence that there's a thing of Oreos here,
just,
isn't it?
Yeah, just because sometimes you get a little peckish in the middle of the show yes. and you just need to grab an Oreo.
And just eat it into the microphone.
Yeah.
Yep, you know me.
Well, shall we get to the news then? Google's next operating system will be called Android Oreo 8.0. My vote was for Octopus, but I understand that Oreo makes a lot more sense, especially as it was timed with today's total eclipse in the United States, which we did not see because it was cloudy here.
Yeah, it's pretty miserable, actually, but whatever.
It wasn't as cloudy in New York, where Google unveiled the Oreo statue, the first Android statue located anywhere outside of Google's Mountain View campus. The Nexus 5 X, the Nexus 6P, the Pixel, and the Pixel XL builds have entered carrier testing, but with less than 15% of Android users on the current build, Nougat, it might be a while until you get the update. So some notable things, 2 times faster, allegedly, limits background activity like that for some more battery life. Picture-in-picture. Let's you could watch use your pip to watch us and do something else more useful, although I can't imagine what would be more useful than watching us. And anyone on the preview version will get the update as well.
Why are all these Oreos cracked into pieces? I don't understand.
I don't know. I mean, to be honest, I'm less interested in the new features of Android as I am just the fact that I said I didn't really like Oreos.
Oh.
And a lot of people disagreed with that. I don't like them, and yet I'm compelled to eat them, and I'm always sorry when I did.
Yeah, I understand. It's just like, well, actually, I love them, so I don't understand.
But would you prefer, like, a homemade cookie to an Oreo?
Well, yeah, but you know what? Oreos are a necessary evil. Sometimes you just want to sit down with, like, a whole row of them and a glass of milk. As far as desserts are concerned, Burke says, what's so wrong, Megan?
No, that's so wrong.
Oh, it's, I need to learn how to read your writing.
Many Oreos. You've forgotten how to read. That's the other thing they do. They, you know, you forget to read when you eat too many Oreos.
It's true.
That's
fake
science.
Too focused on eating.
I made that up.
I was a little surprised that it was Oreo, even though I shouldn't have been because they've dropped many, many clues. I mean, even at Google I.O., there were Oreos everywhere. We just kind of figured, like, there's no way they're going to out it this early. And I guess that's the point. Sometimes they out it this early and sometimes they send you off in a different direction. But ultimately, like you said, what it is actually really doesn't matter as much as who's going to get it and when. And you pointed out less than 15%. It's 13.5% have Nougat right now. 77.5% of Android users are on Marshmallow, Lollipop, or Kit Kat. That's 2 to 4 year old versions of the operating system. And, you know, this time last year was the Nougat outing, coming out party, and a year on 13.5%. It's just depressing. As a longtime Android fan, and I understand this is just the way it is on Android, I just really hope for the day, long for the day, when we can get an announcement or release of a new version of Android and have any sort of expectation that even a small, you know, bump, like even 20% after a year, which seems paltry. But then at the same time, when you compare it to the overall numbers, I mean, there's so many millions of Android devices out there that even a small percentage is a lot of people. So it really depends on, like, through what lens you look at it. But it just kind of sucks that not everybody's going to get it for at least a year.
I know you long for the day, and I rue the day because it's the one thing we iOS users can always point to, like, "Oh, you never get updates." I say
can
that
always
because,
hold that over our head, like a like an Oreo eclipse.
Yeah, I can and I will, and I okay. oh goodness gracious, I say that because I'm working on the digital cleanse for the new screensavers, hashtag digital cleanse, and I was showing how to clean up your desktop on Android and iOS. And you let me borrow one of your Android phones. And it's so you can make a clean desktop. You can put apps wherever you want. It's way superior. So at least I have that, but you don't get updates to hold up your
Hey, there's strengths on both sides, but the update thing is a pretty big deal, big issue. Part of Android O is Project Treble, which is in some ways one of the more significant developments to tackle this very issue. It's separating the underlying hardware from the OS to a degree that you could see if they continue to do that somewhere down the line, these update aspects behind the scenes can be separated from the OS so that the update could still happen. And then any of the customization that hardware manufacturers do aren't what's holding it back. There's still other hurdles, carrier involvement, all that kind of stuff that's going to slow it down. But we can only hope for an improvement because it just continues to be kind of lame that, like, hooray, new version of Android. Doesn't matter to you, though. You probably won't get it for another year. It just kind of sucks. But one thing I did hear today, this is only tangentially related because it'll probably hear more about it at Google's hardware event in the fall, is that not only there are basically rumors pointing to not only two new Pixel devices at the event, but also a new Pixel Chromebook, which I've been looking to replace. This is the first generation Chromebook Pixel that I have right here. I've been looking to replace it with a follow-up, and I mean, they haven't had an update since 2015, so really hoping that'll happen. Also possibly a miniature Google Home device if you needed your Google Home to be even smaller.
Oh, like a Google Home Dot?
Yeah, that's probably what I'm guessing anyways. We don't really know very much about it, but I'm guessing that's probably what it is. Little ones to sprinkle throughout your home, like little dots. Our favorite thing from 2016, Megan, you remember this, the secure enclave on iOS.
It was our favorite phrase to say.
Favorite thing to say. It's a lot of fun to say. You should try sometime. That's reportedly less secure after a hacker by the name of Xerub obtained the full decryption key. The secure enclave processor that was first introduced with the iPhone 5S is a tiny coprocessor that runs on its own. It's separated from the OS to handle Touch ID interactions and transactions on iOS devices. The firmware code now is posted for anyone to get at, reportedly, on GitHub, and could potentially lead to Touch ID hacks and other attacks that benefit from the decryption, though Apple is saying, after taking a look, that it doesn't necessarily expose user data specifically. But if hackers can analyze how this firmware actually works and, like, reverse engineer it, they could potentially figure out ways to do that.
So, you know, metaphors like this, as we found when we enjoyed so much talking about the secure enclave in 2016.
2016. Those are simpler times.
Right. The secure enclave, by the way, has been around since the iPhone 5C. But with the FBI case, it became a big deal. Right. And, you know, that's when we really found that metaphors and security, you know, present day security, they often fall short. But this is what Rene Ritchie, this is what he described this situation as. There's a vault that Touch ID, the secure enclave, is a vault. And over it is a veil, like a black blanket. And what just happened was they lifted the black blanket. So now you can see the vault.
Now you can see the Wizard of Oz back there.
No, you can't even see. The wizard is still in the vault. Oh, okay. The wizard's inside the vault. All you see is that it is a vault.
There is a vault that exists.
Yes.
And now we know that. Because,
right.
Yeah,
so you see it wasn't a closet. It wasn't a
banana.
Cage. It wasn't a banana. It wasn't any of those things. It's a vault. And now you can sort of like try your spoofing techniques and your other kinds of cracks. So in a way, yes, it is notable that this has been released. But it's not like, watch out. Touch ID is, you know, be scared. Go, you know, get an Android phone. By all means, get an Android phone if you want to. But but it's not, this isn't all doom and gloom.
Right. Yeah. It's not as if suddenly Touch ID as a technology is completely completely hacked to the point that, okay, well, I guess we're not using that anymore, which, I mean, would be a good thing to not happen because of the following story that we'll talk about here in a second. But yes, the hacker that discovered this kind of pointed that out as well. He basically said, like, in and of itself, it's not that much, but access to the firmware does mean that it can be, like, the process of using it can be analyzed, and it would be really hard, but that could be reverse engineered to the point to where it could unleash some sort of secrets about how this works, how data is stored, and potentially represent, you know, place code on top of that that would represent it to be something different than it actually is. And for something like password harvesting or something like that. But Apple even says they have no plans to fix it at this point. I don't know. Like, I saw that mentioned in the Tech Republic article, but I didn't see, like, source at Apple said. It was just like a comment that was made there. So I don't know who exactly at Apple made that comment, because that seemed a little weird to me that Apple would hear this and be like, yeah, well, okay, whatever. Our firmware of this, you know, ultra secure storage area is compromised. We have no plans to fix it. I doubt that they have no plans to fix it, I guess is what I'm saying. I'm sure at some point they're going to roll out one of their updates and address it. But I don't know how that's complicated by the fact that this is a hardware, it's hardware. It's built into the phone and it's separate from the OS. I don't know how you tackle that.
Yeah, I don't know either. Yeah, because some phones have it and some older phones don't have it.
And some
phones might not have it in the future. Even with this big Android news, I still have time to slip one iPhone rumor into the news mix. The company's new flagship smartphone is expected to feature a 3D face scanner instead of Touch ID, which we've talked about. The Korea Herald says this is the new piece of news, that the 3D face scanner will be able to scan your face in a millionth of a second.
That's really fast.
Very, very fast, which is the key. That's the key. If it doesn't work, if you're standing there waving your phone in front of your face, people are going to get frustrated. Mm-hmm. We've also talked about this before. You can lay your phone down flat on a table or desk, and it will be able to scan your face. And so, the speed is got to make the lack of Touch ID a little easier to take. Touch ID didn't work that well in the beginning either. It still doesn't. It used to really not work if your hands were the least bit sweaty. Now it actually does. I mean, I go running with my phone, and if I need to respond to text messages while I'm running, which is not healthy and I don't recommend it, but which I sometimes do.
Don't do that. You're going to have a lot of mistypes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But I am a multitasker, even though I know I shouldn't be. So, yeah, this is, we still have to wait. I mean, it's just like, this is like little drips and drabs of iPhone rumors that are still interesting to me, at least.
Well, and it might not just be iPhone, because Qualcomm says their technology should match or beat this capability on Android devices, you know, even faster than a millionth of a second, a millionth of a millisecond. No, a millionth of a second. Still very fast. We'll see if Qualcomm can back that up. But
yeah. And this, the Korea Herald gave no source. There was no source for their this quote of theirs. But I think it probably is Samsung that released this, because they're the ones developing that. So
yeah,
I don't think it's fake news, but we'll know soon enough.
I'm just so used to saying those words. It's like every other sentence. HTC dropped the price. This is real news, by the way. HTC dropped the price of the HTC Vive VR headset from $799 to $599, a move that puts it closer in price with the Oculus Rift, which you may remember last month had a price drop to $499. Of course, HTC says this isn't a reaction to that price drop. Oh, no. Rather, it was the plan all along to lower the cost to help it reach a broader market. The kit comes with the headset, two motion controllers, two wall-mounted sensors for tracking movement, and a free trial to Viveport subscription service for five titles per month.
So will you buy one?
No. I would love to have one. It's just this and then a system, and I just don't got that in my budget.
Yeah. I guess this might make it more accessible to businesses, since it's lower price. Who knows? I mean, I thought that more Oculus Rifts had been sold than Vives, but it turns out, nobody's releasing their exact numbers, but IDC estimates 725,000 Vives have been shipped versus 620,000 Rifts.
Oh, that is interesting. Mm-hmm. I think I would have imagined it would be the other way, too. Although HTC Vive had, out of the gate, Vive had better hardware, and some would argue that it still does. But out of the gate, it had kind of the motion touch controllers, and had the positional tracking. It offered a lot more than Oculus. Maybe it just got a good head start, and that's why.
Yeah, they're in China. They're in 60% to 70% of the 5,000 arcades.
The HTC Vive is?
The Vive is, yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, like I think an enterprise version of it. But yeah, it's in arcades in China.
I should also mention Oculus. So they dropped the price of their kit to $499. However, there is a summer sale that they're doing that's still going on. So if you really want to get in on the Oculus side of things, $399 for the whole kit. So it's still pretty inexpensive. I mean, when you talk about, you know, a system that's like half of what you would have paid a year ago. But you still have to get the system or the computer to power it. That's kind of the problem, unless you already have one of those. But you know, I think ultimately it's all about continuing to move, continuing to keep the hype up, because investors, analysts, it's kind of losing steam at this point. And, you know, you got to, how do you keep people interested in VR? Because, man, a year ago it was flying high, and now it's just kind of like, just because a lot of people don't, you know, people don't have it in great numbers. So what is there to get excited about?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Well, stay tuned for some tips on drone photography. But first, let's take a minute to thank Rocket Mortgage, the sponsor of this episode. Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans gives you the confidence you need when it comes to buying a home or refinancing your existing home loan. It's simple, allowing you to fully understand all the details, and then you'll be more confident that you're getting the right mortgage that's customized just for you. It's also convenient. Their trusted partners allow you to share your financial information with Rocket Mortgage at the touch of a button on whatever device you're using. And it's powerful. So whether you're looking to buy your first home or your 10th, Rocket Mortgage is able to perform thousands of calculations in seconds. Based on your income, your assets, and your credit, Rocket Mortgage can analyze all of the home loan options for which you qualify and then find the one that's right for you. Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Apply simply, understand fully, mortgage confidently. If you want to get started, all you have to do is go to rocketmortgage.com/TNT. Don't forget the TNT at the end. That stands for Tech News Today. That way they know where you came from, that we sent you to them. That's rocketmortgage.com/TNT. Equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states, NMLS, consumeraccess.org, number 3030. And we thank Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans for their support.
If you've got a drone and you want to put your cinematic skills to work, our guest, Ant Pruitt from Tech Republic, has the knowledge to get you there. Welcome to the show, Ant. It's great to have you here.
Hey, Mr. Howe. How you doing, bud?
Doing all right. It's great to finally see you on the stream. So first, you wrote about how to create, you put it, stunning cinematic video with drones. Do people need state-of-the-art drones and camera technology to do this? And if not, what do you say should be the bare minimum? Because I know a lot of people probably have drones, but like, what level of drones are we talking about here?
Well, I would say at the bare minimum, start with the Phantom 3. The Phantom 3 standard is good enough because you're going to get 1080p footage and you're going to get 30 frames per second for video. But I wouldn't go any lower than that as far as a camera.
So obviously the Phantom 3 has a camera kind of installed in the drone. Is it possible for people to kind of bring their own cameras and expect the same level of quality, or do you want a camera on the level and integrate it into a drone just like this?
Well, there are other options out there, specifically with the FPV drones, where you can attach your own camera to it. The problem with something like that is you lose a lot of control and reaction time to your movements, because it's not necessarily integrated into the main motherboard and the transmitter that you have.
Got it.
So I know you're a professional photographer. What's the biggest difference between just the photography that you do regularly and then, you know, since you've been moving into drone, it's obviously videography. What's the big, or have you been taking still photos as well from the drone?
Well, with the drone, you have to take in consideration safety. You know, when I'm walking around doing my street photography stuff, I'm always thinking about the privacy of others. And that's a real serious issue because of social media ruining photography for a lot of people. Mm. But when you're out there with your drone, you have to think about the safety of others and the safety of the environment that you're in, because anything can happen. I mean, yeah, these things are pretty state of the art and they fly really well, but mine has fallen out of the sky before, just at random. And you have to be careful with hurting someone or damaging property or things like that. So that's always on my mind. And a lot of times when it comes to if there's surrounding people there, I try to make sure that I am quite visible and they know that I'm getting ready to fly. And a lot of times they enjoy that moment of knowing, oh, there's a drone here, and they sort of wave and participate in the shot to try to give you a different mood of your shot.
Nice. How exactly do you want to make sure that your camera that's on board is set up prior to launch? I'm sure you've nailed this through trial and error, but what do you recommend for people to figure this out?
First and foremost, when you fire up your drone for the first time, don't even put your propellers on. Just fire it up and walk through your camera settings. Take a look at the menu where you have your color profile, your aspect ratio, and your resolution. Of course, 4K is going to be the king, but not all of them have 4K. But as you see there on your on the article there, definitely try to set it to the log color profile. Because it's going to be a flat image, okay? It's not going to look good when you're out there flying around, but when you go to work with it in post, it's going to be so much easier to bring out the contrast and to bring out the saturation of your different scenes.
What is log? Could you explain that real quick, just as an idea of why that setting
versus others? It's just a profile that your camera's processed with, and it makes everything flat. You don't get the vivid blues or the really bright reds. It just makes everything sort of muted and balanced. Sort of boring when you first see it.
So what other tips do you have for processing the footage that you take?
Well, you have a bunch of different options out there, and I know a lot of people aren't able to afford the likes of Final Cut Pro or Premiere Pro, which is what I use. But you can jump into DaVinci Resolve, which is totally free, and it's pretty daggone powerful and allows you to go in and color grade. Actually, a lot of professionals use DaVinci Resolve to color grade more so than they would use Premiere or Final Cut. But it's pretty easy and intuitive to step through it and make things look as cinematic as possible. You can have lookup tables, which are pretty much filters. And I know photographers are going to just cringe when I say that. But think of Instagram and its filters. It's a similar aspect when you have lookup tables, or also known as LUTs, L-U-T's.
I've never even heard of this software, to be honest. I'm ashamed.
Really?
I'm ashamed to admit I've never heard of this. So this is a free kind of like video editing suite?
It is. It is pretty robust as well, brother. You install it, and you better have some hardware, you know, to push it, because it's going to really do everything you're trying to do to make that video pop.
Oh, that's really cool. And Burke just told me Blackmagic. So this is a Blackmagic project.
Yes, Blackmagic. Right?
Ah, okay. Right. Man, I'd never heard of that. That's really a really good tip there. What about flight patterns? Because, I mean, a big part of what makes drones so great for cinematic video is that they can kind of follow pattern to follow the person that holds the mm-hmm. control. But, there are other ways to do this. What have you found to be the most effective?
Well, when I tried to do the follow with the control, I just didn't quite feel like that I had control, if you will, because sometimes you can stick a controller in the subject's pocket or something like that. I've done that a few times and have them just go down the street or go down a field or whatever. But I'd rather be able to have a little change in elevation when I'm following a subject, because it makes it look a little less static and gives it a little more dramatic feel, depending on what you're trying to shoot and what mood you're trying to set with it. The flight modes are pretty nice. The orbit mode is pretty good, but I much rather do it myself. I know with my particular drone, I use an Altair Robotics X-Star. The orbit mode doesn't do as well, because every now and then, at about every 10 to 20 feet, it jerks just a little bit to change the angle. And that just drives me nuts when I'm going to edit. So I've sort of figured out how to do the orbit myself. And it takes a lot of practice to do that, because you can just jerk around on the screen and it's very, very noticeable.
So I saw that you reviewed the Polar Pro Drone Trekker, which is like a backpack to carry.
Oh, yeah.
Do you recommend it? And do you recommend any other gear for people who are heading out to do some drone
travel? I do, actually. I recommend the Polar Pro Drone Trekker because it is a dedicated drone backpack. Okay, you can carry along your DSLR and things like that in it. But if you specifically want to carry your drone, it's built for that. It has all of the perfect padding and the extra pockets and things like that that you need for all of your accessories, remote, and so forth. But I'm also carrying around a bag from the folks at Peak Design. They saw another one of my reviews and loved it and sort of sent it to me and said, here, thank you for the review. I had no idea what this bag was. It's called the Everyday Backpack. And I had the thing for about a month before I opened it up. And when I opened it up, I was like, oh, what was I thinking? You know, it's really, 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 really nice. It has all of the things that a photographer thinks about when they're out in the field, as far as how do you access things. You know, you don't necessarily have to take the bag out to get to the bottom of your backpack. You can access things from the side. And then it's waterproof. And I pretty much ran that thing through the ringer on one of my staycation trips down at the beach, and it took a beating and just kept on going. And my drone was safe. The only thing that's different with it is I have to put my drone on the outside of the bag, but it has straps made for that. You strap your drone in like it's a little baby you're carrying around on your chest or something, and it works just fine.
Nice. That's awesome. You also mentioned something in your piece about using a lanyard to steady your movements. And I was like, oh, okay. This obviously comes from trial and error. How exactly do you use a lanyard to do that?
Oh, my goodness. Well, Jason, there was a time I was out flying and, you know, yeah, I'm a big guy, fairly strong or whatever, but I was flying for about an hour and I just got tired and that remote just started to feel heavy. And the more that I tried to make a nice, easy movement, the more I started to shake just from fatigue. And the second I decided to put that lanyard on, it really did take away that extra weight on my fingers and palm of my hand and allowed me to be a little more careful and smooth in my shots.
Well, you have amazing photographs.
Thank you, Megan.
You're welcome. You have stock photos. You also do, I think we have a link to your stock photos that you do. One of my favorite subjects of yours is dogs. So I was hoping, you have some beautiful photos of dogs, and I was hoping you could maybe give us at least one tip of how to photograph our dogs.
Oh, my goodness. Dogs are so difficult because they look at that lens and they're like, dude, stop staring at me.
Exactly.
And they will turn away every single time. But I found that the more that I shot, the more that they became used to it. And now my buddy Kylo Finn, the big black pit bull that you saw there, he just sort of ignores me. When I walk up to him, he will literally just stand there and look and give me the are you done look, you know, and I just snap it and I walk away and he'll go on about his business.
Okay, so familiarity, that's what they need.
Yeah, just if you keep doing it, they'll get used to it and they won't shy away from it as often. But it took a while. It took me a couple of months to get those dogs used to it. Jax is my other little dog.
Yeah, good pictures. So, and also another focus of the articles around sound. I know that in a lot of like video recorded on drones that I've seen, you don't want to hear the sound because the sound's basically useless. It's just so. I mean, and I also know actually from going to school for audio production is that bad sound can make good video look bad. So how do you treat the sound so that the all of the work that you put into the visuals of the video are respected?
About once a week, I have dedicated time to go through and find audio that just piques my interest. And you can look at sites like Audioblocks, which is a subscription service, and it gives you all types of audio, not just music, but it can also give you sound effects, and it's all royalty free. So you don't have to worry about, you know, you posting it up on YouTube and you get the flag and people start, you know, telling you to take it down and all that. You don't have to worry about any of that. But there are other people out there that offer you the opportunity to use their tracks. I've connected with a lot of folks on SoundCloud and they love it if you use their audio.
Yeah.
And just they just want to be accredited and you know, get a little more recognition about it. And so I have at least one day a week where I just go through all of my music and figure out, okay, I like this, I like this. This is going to be more for a stormy kind of scene. This is going to be more for an upbeat kind of scene. And I categorize it that way. And as I'm doing my videos, I try to make the video work with the music. You know, if a beat breaks, I try to make a cut with that break.
Right.
And you can see a difference. Television does it all the time. Movie trailers do it all the time. And if you have to, you know, adjust the gains a little bit, take the bass and pump it up a little bit. It just depends on the mood, you know. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Oh, and I love that. That was a fun shoot there at the beach.
It's crazy what drones enable as far as motion video is concerned. Whereas, I mean, 10 years ago, like this is the stuff that you know, if you were making a film, you were getting a helicopter to do this. And that was incredibly expensive. Or some of the things that I've seen, you were getting a huge expensive cinematic crane, you know, to pull it off. And now this little drone with a remote control can do as good as any of that.
The thing that a lot of people tend to forget about with drones is, yeah, they can fly up to 400 feet legally, but you don't have to necessarily get that high. I can get just as nice a shot 50 feet off the ground. You know, mm-hmm. It's all about understanding what your composition is and how to frame things up.
Awesome. Ant Pruitt, it's a pleasure getting you on. Thank you so much for taking time to talk to us about drone photography and videography and everything. Where do you want people to follow all of your work online?
You can follow me on Twitter at @Ant_Pruitt because I post a lot of things there. You'll see my Instagram link to there every now and then as well. And check me out on YouTube, youtube.com/AntPruitt.
Right on. Thank you, Ant.
Thank you.
Appreciate it.
Thank you.
All right. Take care. We'll talk to you soon. Take care.
Well, Sean writes, we got some feedback. He says, while discussing the Essential Phone, Megan made a fairly long point of discussing how The Verge review of the Essential Phone focused so much on style and glitz and glam. But what she said next was what shocked me. When discussing that many reviewers are pointing to the fact this phone does not push branding in your face because there are no logos on it, Megan quickly replied with a very affirmative, who cares? Coming from someone who has made it clear their appreciation for Apple's design aesthetic, that is a little surprising. On numerous episodes of TNT, Megan made it extremely clear how much she detests round-faced smartwatches and specifically has mentioned that it's because she can't stand the way they look. I am certainly not an Essential Phone fan because I believe it has a limited audience. It's important to remember that Apple completely rebuilt their brand and company based on looks. That is true, Sean. What I meant was, who cares? Like, it was an actual question. Like, I you know, do people care? That was my point. Like, I didn't mean to say...
I didn't mean to say that nobody cares.
Yes. Everything Sean says is true. That's my personal appearance. But I was wondering, like, do normal other people care about this? Like, do enough people care?
Yeah.
Does the average person care? That was my point. Not just like, who cares?
Right. Yeah. I mean, as far as the logo, the lack of a logo specifically, which I think is what that comment was about. Yeah, that's a really good question if anybody actually ever noticed that. I could tell you for dang sure, though, this is the Asus Zenfone AR, and I can't stand the logo up at the corner. It sours the look of the phone entirely. But, mm-hmm. I mean, I look at phones all the time, so maybe mm-hmm. I'm just more tuned into that sort of thing, and the average person wouldn't even notice. The average person probably wouldn't notice that there isn't a logo, but they might notice if there is. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Maybe that's the difference.
Yeah, and I guess I do wonder who does care. If you care, email me, megan@twit.tv or at Megan Maroney, because I am interested in whether people care. And his email was a little bit longer and also went into the fact that, you know, there's this basically a duopoly of, you know, iPhones and Android phones, and the, you know, the more creativity that we have, the better. So, yes, thanks for your email. Cool. Always email us, tnt@twit.tv.
Yes, please. You can also email us for this segment, TNT's Fan of the Day. Today, it's Mattia Schultz who emailed this picture saying, how I watch TNT while driving south with the kids to learn about and experience ourselves the science of an eclipse. And he also says, considering it a parental win that my kids couldn't relate to the Chuck E. Cheese conversation. So that means I failed miserably because my kids have gone three times. Show us how you watch or listen to TNT. Just record a video or take a picture of yourself or your setup. Post it on Instagram, Google Plus, Twitter, or Facebook. Use the hashtag HowIWatchTNT and we will find it. I hope you got a good view of the solar eclipse on that trip because ours was pretty pathetic.
Mm-hmm. Well, what I think is when I saw on Twitter like people's real view of totality, you know, it's dark and it's like this short cell phone video. And I think they drove all the way there to just take a video with their cell phone. Like, I think it was 2 minutes long, right? Yeah. And in totality, yeah, it was fully 2 minutes. So hopefully they spent the other time enjoying or howling at the moon or whatever you were meant to do.
Yep.
In honor of the creativity of Minecrafters everywhere, Microsoft announced a special edition Xbox One Minecraft edition. Microsoft says the new gaming machine is built to resemble the most noble of blocks and includes the redstone circuit when you flip it over and Minecraft sounds when you boot it up. It will cost $400, $399. It has a creeper-themed gamepad and Minecraft skins, sounds, textures, and much more. When it looks
A Porky the Pig inspired controller sold separately, $74.99.
Whoa! It's Porky the Pig.
Yeah,
that's the pig, the Minecraft pig.
Yeah, Porky the pig.
His name is Porky.
Yeah. Oh. Well, at least that's what it said here, and then I looked it up because I'm clueless on Minecraft, and it said yes, Porky the pig. So apparently that's the name of the pig.
They're allowed to call him Porky the pig.
I guess so.
I do. We have a little stuffed pig like that. I never knew his name was Porky.
Yeah.
Every day we learn something new.
Is this in the future for any of your kids? Are they even still in Minecraft at this point?
It's not their greatest love.
Okay.
But
this act makes total sense considering
we've never gotten an Xbox before, so I'm certainly not going to buy one with my own money for them.
No, you don't want this for yourself? It's really elegant.
I don't know. Maybe it is really elegant. So then there's also the Xbox One Enhanced. Did that just come out today too? That one that's $500?
I think that's still kind of on the... Yeah, no, I don't believe they got a release today. Okay. There was some sort of extra news on that.
Okay. Maybe. My kids mostly watch YouTube, so I do think that maybe at this point buying an Xbox would actually make them more creative because they would be participating and not just soaking in all of the whatever brothers they watch, Logan and Paul something or other brothers.
Something something YouTube.
Yeah, something something two brothers who do things on YouTube.
I really don't have a whole lot to say about the Minecraft edition other than it makes a lot of sense. Where was it like a year or two ago? But good job, Microsoft. That's all I got. Apparently, I've eaten one too many Oreo cookies today.
Yeah.
So I think that's it. No more Oreo cookies for us. TNT records live every Monday through Friday, 4 p.m. Pacific, 7 p.m. Eastern, 2300 UTC at twit.tv/live. You can be part of the show by emailing us, tnt@twit.tv. Leave us a short voicemail, 260-TNT-SHOW, and find us on Twitter at TechNewsTodayTV.
In fact, you can find all the ways to subscribe to our show at twit.tv/TNT. And don't forget to join me on the 10-week digital cleanse on the new screensavers. We're not giving up any of our devices. We're just cleansing them. We're getting out all the toxins, like the toxic notifications. We're getting those out, and we're cleaning out our inbox. And then this weekend, we are going to be getting rid of all those apps that you don't need, like an old sweater. We're tossing them. Hmm. And if you have advice for me on what you want to cleanse, I am at Megan Maroney.
And I'm at Jason Howell. Thank you, Kevin, for pushing buttons. For editing the show. It's not Josh today, right? Okay, it's Kevin. He sounds thrilled. Thanks to Burke for helping out in the studio. And thanks to you, whoever you are, for talking tech with us today. We'll see y'all tomorrow. I hope you enjoy your Oreos. See you later.
See you later. Like we're coming back?